This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Welcome in to this week's episode of 5-on-3. I'm Sophia Smith, joined by Lydia Perner and Dom Sansone. We are 22 days away from the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I'm very excited, even though the Rangers aren't in it, and actually none of our local teams are currently sitting in a playoff spot. So as an Islanders reporter, not too excited about that. But first, before we get into it, how are you guys doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I haven't been on a 5-on-3 in a while because my schedule just never allows
for
it.
Yeah, we've missed you.
I feel like I haven't been, other than the women's show, I have just not been in studio much. But yeah, I'm excited to talk some hockey. Like you said, it's an interesting week with none of the teams being in the Tri-State area in the playoffs, especially the Islanders. Like, I thought that spot was safe and sound, and then all of a sudden you look at the standings since post-Olympic break, and the Columbus Blue Jackets have been one of the best teams, and so have the Senators, and those are the two teams kind of in the Islanders' way. So, yeah, it should be an interesting final 3 weeks, and then we get some playoff hockey. So, all looking good, except for, like you said, fact the Rangers are eliminated.
Yeah, I've been well. Enjoying the tournament, March Madness. March and April, two of the best months of the year. Got the Masters, and then obviously Stanley Cup playoffs, NBA. A lot going on in the sports world, so a lot to kind of take in. But, glad my local hometown team, Buffalo, in the mix. We've talked about it many times.
Stanley Cup contender, potentially.
They are.
There's no way.
Very young.
There's no way.
I don't know. I think there is, because I think there's the take with the Sabres is they've been technically underperforming. When you look at this season, how good they are, I think now, hindsight's 2020, you could say they've been underperforming for the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Not that they were bad the last 2 or 3 years. But, if you were to ask me, 2 years ago, are the Sabres good? I'd say, no, they're just bad. I wouldn't say that they're underperforming. Now they're finally actually playing to where they are, where they are right now. I think this is, a contender. I also just think the East is weak in general.
100% of the East is weak. And when you look at the standings, it's just fascinating how just... Okay, we were going to talk about the Metro near teams first, but I guess we can talk about the standings first because I have a lot of things to say about this. First of all, the East is weak, but the West...
Is even weaker.
Is weaker unless you're looking at the Central Division. The rest of the... it's just fascinating. And even when you look at the league standings in, not even considering conferences, the Oilers and Vegas are sitting at 18th and 19th in the overall league standings, and they're sitting in second and third in the Pacific.
Well, the fact of the matter is if the Rangers were in the Western Conference this year, they would have been buyers at the deadline.
Crazy.
Well, looking at the point totals, the Predators have 77 points and they sit in the wild card 2 spot. The Devils would be 1 point out at 76 points of that spot. The Flyers and Capitals would both be in, and the Red Wings, and the Senators. All these teams would be in out west, which begs that, question about playoff format.
Right, so I was going to ask about that, because I actually, don't really have a problem with the playoff format. I think that it's very exciting to see half the teams, 16 teams in the playoffs, and I think that it makes sense to split it by division. Even when it turns out like this, that's just kind of how it's gonna happen. A few years, I'm curious to hear you guys' thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think the playoff formatting, I forget there was one complaint with it that I agreed with, probably the 2-3 playing each other. I'm never a big fan of that, but rather go 1-8. That's the only change I would make though. In terms of who actually the matchups, I don't think you can, because it's next year this could be the opposite problem type of thing. So it's if you nitpick the fact that the Kings and those teams shouldn't be in the mix, well, you know what, next year that could be the case in the Eastern Conference, and the West is a juggernaut.
Right.
So I don't think I know there's a lot of calls to change that, but I don't really think it's that big of a deal.
Yeah, no, I agree. It goes both ways, you said. It can help you 1 year. It can hurt you the next year. You're always going to get people, and especially in a league that's driven a lot. You have a lot of leagues today driven by money. It's how many extra games can we get in? And I think it's a big thing, but I think, you know, right where they at with the number of teams, I think it's the right number. I don't think they should increase it. I don't think they should decrease it. And, you know, you have divisions for a reason.
Right.
Like, these divisions are structured this way. The top three in each division get in, and then two wild cards in each conference. So it's kind of set up that way for a reason, I feel like.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I love playoff hockey. So, and I'm excited to see, like, the new teams getting the mix. But yeah, so the Rangers were the second team eliminated, first team in the East to be eliminated. They have lost five straight after winning four. But Monday was Mika's 1,000th game, and I wasn't going to go to the game, and then Lydia texted me that I had to be at the game, so I was at the game. Very beautiful ceremony. They had Irma Zibanejad, his wife, with the voiceover of a beautiful tribute video. And I was waiting for, you know, Chris Kreider's, you know, congratulations, Mika. Wasn't on the Jumbotron, but they did post it afterwards, so I got that. But the game was probably the worst showing of effort that the Rangers have had this season. With 10 shots on goal, it was 9, and then they gave them an extra one after the game. I don't know. I walked out of there thinking, how can you get single-digit shots on goal? But they didn't have that. They had one more. Yeah, just a very poor effort for a game that was supposed to mean a lot. And I know that, like, for Mika and for the rest of the guys, it was, like I said, a very meaningful night. And they knew that. And to put that kind of effort onto the ice and match a franchise low since the league officially started tracking the stat in 1959 is pathetic. And, like, we've seen this team have so many pathetic nights, but on this, at this specific game, for that to happen, I just think is unacceptable. I don't know. Lydia?
Well, I think the big problem in that game was the fact that in the second period, like, the Rangers had to kill 7 minutes of penalty time. And it's hard to get into a flow when you have to kill that many penalties. I'm not saying it's an excuse for why they only put 10 shots on goal, but that could be, like, a potential, I guess, explanation. I think that there's some sort of correlation. I think I was mentioning this to you, yeah, Sophia, with, like, for all teams, for the Rangers specifically this season, the Centennial Knights. They have had a slow start after every Centennial night, and at least in the Zibanejad ceremony, the Senators took the ice at the same time as the Rangers. But I think when you have these ceremonies pregame, the home team is kind of focused on the ceremony because you want to see your teammate get honored. You want to, you know, be in the moment there where the other team, like, can kind of zone out, make sure, like, they're still moving around on the bench, keeping their body warm type of thing. So I think I've tried to get answers out of, like, the players about this, and they're always like, the other team is the same start time. Yeah. And I really wanted to ask Sullivan about that too, but I was like, he's going to give me the same, like, the other team has a start time. But I really think there is a correlation. If you think back to that Henrik Lundqvist Minnesota Wild game, I think 2 years ago, like, it was the same problem. The Rangers had a slow start despite a great ceremony. And I just think when you have these pregame ceremonies, like, you're just not in the right focus. But that's not to say that they shouldn't enjoy the moment. I just think it's, like, when it's a game of, like, small margins, that it does make a difference. Yeah. And that's why the Rangers kind of got off on this slow start, but also they gave a power play goal in that first period when they go down, which kind of, they actually killed most of the penalties. The PK actually looked pretty good against the Senators. For, you know, piece of the Rangers has been terrible lately, the penalty kill. But I mean, I guess that was the bright spot, was that the PK was really good. That was, like, the one thing I said to JT. I was like, PK actually looked good tonight, and he was like, yeah. But no, definitely you can't be shorthanded that much and have your best players who don't kill penalties sit for, like, Lafreniere doesn't kill penalties, Perreault doesn't kill penalties, and so they're sitting for, you know, 7 minutes in a period, plus, like, you got to think about, like, the delayed penalty time, like, that can, you know, add up a minute, 2 minutes. And I always think, like, when you kill a penalty, it's like almost like 2 minutes, 10-20 seconds, because that stretch where the player's coming out of the box but the team still has possession, like, you're not free there. That's still, to me, like, power play time. So that was really the biggest problem, just the Rangers never got into the groove of it. And I mean, they tried in the third period, but
Well, yeah. I'm still living in the olden days when a penalty kill was, like, basically a goal because, like, Kreider's on the team. And also just, I don't know, I feel like the even last season when they were doing poorly, it just, like, the penalty kill and the shorthanded goals, I feel like they were leading in the league in shorthanded goals last season.
The structure of, I think David Quinn's in charge of the penalty kill this year. Maybe it's a power play. But the structure that the Rangers have going on the penalty kill is terrible. It's not Sullivan's not the one that manages penalty kill, but like I think it was after the Winnipeg game they gave up the goal to, I forget who it was. It was the Kyle Connor like pass into the slot. Yeah. And so then after the game I was like, you know, I'm gonna ask Sullivan about like the PK because it's not good. And I was like to him, so like the penalty kill's been a bit of an issue. Like, what would you see this afternoon? He looked at me and was like, not a bit, like a big issue. And then he broke it down and said that those, the four players, they're not anticipating the lanes well enough. Like, they're not getting their sticks and reading the play well enough. They're not being aggressive enough. And the third thing was they're just letting other teams cross their into their zone and across that blue line way too easily. And that's what, like when I was watching the Leafs game on TV, I feel like I found myself yelling. I'm like, step up, step up, step up, go to the player, put pressure. Because when you watch teams kill penalties against the Rangers, like, there's always someone on the players. There's, like, even if you give up a goal because you're a little too aggressive, fine. But I don't want you to give up a goal because your four players are just standing in a diamond and not even, like, contesting the puck. That's my big thing with the penalty kill. So it hasn't obviously been great for the Rangers. But
and going back to what you said about the what did you just say? The
penalty kill.
No, right before that. About the centennial.
Oh, the centennial.
So, like, I struggle with the idea of it being that it's, I mean, it could totally be that it's the whole huge ceremony, like, their focus on that. But, like, when you have so many centennial nights, like, it just feels like to a certain point, like, how can it keep happening over
and
over? But
I don't think centennials,
it's like if you have a girl,
that doesn't mean, like, the chance of having a girl is different the next time. It's like, what is it? It's not.
But, like, you think that, like, they've, like, I don't know. I just feel like they've already experienced it.
Yeah, but that's, it's not about having already experienced it. It's the fact that the Rangers, with centennials
and
specific,
they've made the mistake.
They had to take the ice, like, 10 minutes before the other team took
it's
the
a routine,
ice.
It's a routine thing more than anything. As an athlete, I'll be the first one to tell you, like, senior night, even though, like, it's not as nearly as big as some of these centennials, like, you get a little bit out of your routine and you're not in the same mindset. You're not ready to go and you get smacked in the face, period one. So, like, whether they've been accustomed to it or not, it's still a change in what they're accustomed to. And the fact that they're taking the ice earlier or later, like, that's all different and puts them at a disadvantage. Whether you want to believe it or not, it is.
Yeah, I think also probably, like, the teams that they're playing against, like, guys could be, if they have an extra 15 minutes, you might hop on the bike or something after warm-up. Like, you might, you know, go and roll out or do something while the Rangers are standing there with the ceremony. And it's not a dig on the ceremony because I think they're great. I'm just, like, I really do believe that there's correlation here, but it's not an excuse.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So the Rangers still lost this game only by one goal, and then they lost again to the Leafs on Wednesday, also by one goal, but this time they outshot the Leafs 43-18. Now, Igor did not have his best game, but I don't know. I just think that, like, it's so typical Rangers to have 10 shots on goal and then 43 shots on goal and still lose the game, still by one goal. But the bright spots have been, like we've said in the past, Mika, Laugh, Perreault, specifically Mika, though, because just what a obviously a bounce back year for him.
That's what JT Miller's going to do next year.
No, that's not
JT. Okay, let's talk JT for a second because I actually do want to bring this point up. So, I think this whole season he's been a step behind, but he's been injured the entirety of the season. He was out for like 15 games at the beginning of the year. Trocheck was out, right? So it was like Trocheck was hurt, he was hurt. And then Fox gets hurt, and then, you know, JT gets hurt again. The problem, the big reason JT Miller has been the scapegoat is because Chris Drury put him, I don't think if Adam Fox was named the captain, if Vincent Trocheck was named the captain, I just don't think this team was good enough, period. But I think JT Miller, every fan thought, was going to be the player that would get the Rangers back to, like, greatness. And the fact of the matter is that JT Miller, like, there's so many problems with this team prior to this year that that expectation wasn't fair on him. And then you give him the captain. And I am so certain that that room loves Miller. I'm 100% certain of it. I think he's the right captain for that room. I see the way his teammates talk about him. I see the way he talks about his teammates, the way the families, like, interact with each other. But you put a lot of pressure on a guy who needs to wear the captain in his first season when he hasn't even played with a team for that long. So then, yeah, you're kind of jumping the gun in the fact that it's like, okay, maybe we shouldn't have put this type of pressure on Miller right away. But I don't think that's going to change the fact that he could still absolutely have a 100-point season next year.
I think that he could do that, maybe, because he's done it in the past with the Canucks. But I just think that making him captain, like you said, way too early, I don't understand. Like,
but the reason people are mad that JT Miller's the captain is because they're like, oh, he destroyed the Rangers. The Rangers were going to stink no matter what.
I don't think that, I think they just, like,
but that's the discourse online.
He's not the guy to make them better. Like, I think that, like, I just, even if you weren't going to name it Trocheck or Fox, I don't understand how Miller's the guy. Like, you don't have, like, then don't have a captain. Because I don't think
no,
that,
they can't. They didn't have a captain for sure. Yeah, you got to have a captain.
I don't think that having the C on his chest is doing anything. And I told you this, like, I was confused after you have four shots on goal in 40 minutes of hockey. What is being said in that locker room? Because, well, and it could be nothing, but that's the problem that I think, because I, like, we talked, like, Anders Lee said after the Islanders game the other day when they were down 4-1 after the second period, that, like, the belief is not, like, never gone. Like, and they almost came back. They scored two goals in the third and they were, like, pressuring. And obviously the Islanders are in a very different position than the Rangers right now. But I personally, as sitting in those stands, I don't think that a single player on that team thinks that they're going to win that hockey game. They're putting up five more shots to make it nine, six more shots to make it 10. Like, I'm just so curious what Sullivan is saying on the bench or in the locker room, how JT Miller is taking that role of captaincy. Like, where is that going?
Okay, well, first of all, let me talk about the intermission thoughts. Because, so, Peter Laviolette, former Rangers head coach, hopped on with, it was with Laz last week, with Johnny Lazarus. And I think Johnny, like, asked him, or it came up, like, what do you say to players? Like, there was last year, so post game, one of the bad Rangers losses, one of the beats asked, like, what did you say? Did you say anything to your players after the game or in any of the intermissions? And he said, I don't always go into the locker room in the intermission. And that quote got, like, absolutely taken, like Rangers fans, like, ran with it, myself included. I'm like, how the heck do you not say anything to your team when it's embarrassing? But then Laviolette actually broke it down. He said, And Dom, I don't know if you can kind of agree with this point, being an athlete, but it's like, if your team is playing a bad game, you know it. The last thing you want your coach to come in and do is be like, hey, you guys actually look like you suck. There's times and places for the coach to give constructive criticism. Sometimes the intermission is not the time, and that's one way to quickly lose the room. If you go in there and you just tell people what they know is happening, like, it's the same thing. It's like, You can't just, like, a coach or a captain or anyone can't just necessarily go in and be like, in the intermission, we've been, like,
so
you guys have been terrible.
Like,
but that's,
let the depression set in. Like,
well, it's a good, you make a good point.
You reset,
Lydia.
But when you get back onto the ice, and Sullivan kind of mentioned this, you know, media timeouts, you know, the little stoppages in game. That's when you're like, all right, guys, like, we're not playing well. We got to get more shots
through.
We got to go faster.
It's not getting through their heads then.
No, in one ear, out the other. But regardless, I agree with your mm-hmm. point. When you don't come in the locker room like that, it is crazy. But it sends a clear message. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys know that you're playing poorly. Like, what am I going to do? Come in here and tell you you're playing poorly? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, at this point,
and
you're
that's
NHL
not to say
player.
The coach never goes in the room.
Right,
it's
of
like,
course.
Pick your times and spots.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. Like, if you do it every time, it becomes consistent, and mm-hmm. then you're not sending a clear message. Mm-hmm. You know, if you pick and choose your moments like he did, it's much more powerful. Mm-hmm. It's a good tool. But at the end of the day, like you said, when you're out on the ice, providing that criticism on the whiteboard, talking to your players can sometimes be more beneficial than mm-hmm. just saying, hey, we sucked. We got to improve this on a whiteboard in the locker room when you're 15 minutes to starting a period.
Because I think when you look at the actual breakdown of, like, all the games the Rangers lost that have recently, like, yeah, they put 10 shots through, but they hit the centers 19 more times. Like, they destroyed the face-off battle. So it's like, it's not, I don't necessarily want to boil, like, to me, I don't really boil the Rangers' right now down to effort. I just think they just don't have the skill. Like, that's what I think it is. Like, they out-hit the Senators 39-20, which means they're going in deep and finishing their checks. It means, you know, they're playing the physical game. They, you know, had 62% of the faceoffs. It's not like they're checked out. They just aren't that good. That's the reality of it to me. They're just,
I don't know.
They're not a good team.
I just feel like neither are the Canucks, but they're not putting up. I know it doesn't boil down to shots.
No, the Canucks are some games putting like 10, 12 shots on. They're pretty bad. Yeah.
At what point does it come down to, though, and this is what we saw up in Buffalo, like, you get rid of Adams, you bring in Yarmo. Like, I know the Rangers have had Drury for a while. At what point does it come down to change the GM?
They're not going to do that.
And, well, maybe your players, like, have a renewed sense of hope for next year. I mean, at this point, you're toast, you're out of the playoffs, whatever. But, like, at what point do the players have a spark and be like, now we have life. We have a new GM. We have someone who's leading the team the right way.
I think that's a really good point, because I think, like, the core that's left of the Rangers that had Drury, like the Zibanejads, Fox, and Trocheck, I think Drury, they have seen Drury try to change and learn from his mistakes that he made. Like, Trocheck at the deadline was like, you know, Chris was great to me, he's very open and honest, but I still think there's kind of, like, a stale taste in their mouths, especially when you think about, is there a direction for this Rangers team?
Yeah.
Not necessarily, and that's why I think it's okay for Fox to go out there and say, I don't know what my future looks like with this team, because that's kind of putting pressure on the GM to me to be like, hey, look, if you don't have a vision for where you want to take this team as a general manager, I don't want to stick around. And I think that's, if you can, you know, put pressure on a GM, I think that's great. I, you know, if in a dream scenario, you clean house with the front office. I think Sullivan's a good coach. I think he should stay, but I think that it might be time for them to look elsewhere from Chris Drury. But also, then you look at a guy like Ty Cartier that he just picked up off of waivers, and Cartier's having the best stretch of hockey of his career. So it's like
there's a few diamonds in the rough, but I think that maybe a fresh face would probably be beneficial.
But it's not going to happen. You just got the endorsement of James Dolan, which it means is
But then you get to the whole, like, retool, rebuild, like, well, like, I don't know. The letter was just a huge statement, and then nothing really happened with that except for Panarin. I don't know.
Well, that's another thing I think that's important about that letter is I don't think Sullivan and Drury have had a conversation, or maybe they have. I'm sure they have, but I don't think they've had a conversation clearly about the direction of this team either, because I think there's been a lot of outrage about the way Sullivan's still trying to manage this team rather than focus solely on development, because I think he's trying, like, there's times and space where he does both. I think he had a good quote this morning kind of about, you know, like a guy like Adam Sikora getting his NHL debut, how hard he played down in Hartford, and that he, as an organization right now, they're focusing on consistency. Sikora provided that consistent effort down in Hartford. Now he gets his chance tonight, or the other night in Toronto, to make his NHL debut. But I think when people are like, oh, why is, you know, Connor Sheary playing? Why is Taylor Radish playing? Well, Connor Sheary's actually been one of the best forwards for the Rangers the past couple weeks. So to me, it's like Drury hasn't been to Sullivan and said, look, we're purely in a developmental phase. I don't think he said that, because if we were purely in a developmental phase, I do think, you know... Scott Morrow would be up and playing, and you know, Sheary, we wouldn't see Sheary, we wouldn't see Radish, we'd see Edstrom, we'd see you know, some of those younger guys. But I don't think that conversation's happened between the two.
Yeah, I totally agree.
That's why I don't fault Sullivan, because Sullivan's trying to win hockey games, and he, for better or for worse, he's been able to experiment the whole year because wins haven't really mattered.
I just think that there's up and down, there's communication issues.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that, but I think they'll have to look at that in the offseason. And we'll see next year, get a better sense of kind of where the Rangers are. But look, bright spots, like we said, Adam Sikora made his NHL debut. Dylan Garand played phenomenally in his NHL debut. Like, that was really good to see. It sucks that they lost in the shootout, because, of course, Garand thinks it's all his fault because the shootout was one-on-one. Not at all. He's getting a start tonight, second start in the NHL. Drew Fortescue's making his NHL debut tonight. That's exciting, although I do think that he's probably going to play most of next year in Hartford, because I think the Rangers are going to end up signing someone cheap, because I think they need to prioritize a year of development for Fortescue rather than rushing him into the NHL. So we'll see.
Well, the Rangers play the Blackhawks tonight, sort of battle of the tank. We'll see how that goes. A team that is not tanking but trying to make their way into the playoffs are the Islanders. They won last night in a big win against Dallas. They won 2-1 after losing to Chicago on Tuesday, and they also beat Columbus on Monday. So kind of an up-and-down week for the Islanders, but I think that, and Patrick Waugh says this all the time, that this team, from what I've seen, has so much resilience and just, like, they are a team that's fighting for their spot and they know what they have to do to get into it. It's just a matter of, like, what the other teams are going to do around them. It just sucks that they've been in a playoff spot basically the entire season and, like, held firm to that third spot in the Metro, and now they're currently out of it just because the other teams have caught up. The Blue Jackets have gone on a run. Ottawa.
They're in that second spot right now.
I
just looked.
The Islanders?
Yeah, the Islanders. Wait. I thought they were out of it, too.
No, they are out of it. It says that they're out of
no,
it.
No, they're in the wild card spot.
Yeah, I'm on
Ottawa's,
ESPN.
Oh. Ottawa's technically.
NHL is
yeah.
wrong.
But you if you're ranking by points percentage, which some of the places actually do points
yeah.
percentage, that the problem with the Islanders right now is they have...
they're a game ahead.
Yes.
Yeah, they're in a rough spot.
Two games for some teams.
Yeah, the Red Wings got two games.
Yeah, that's why.
And the Senators and Bruins got one.
Yeah.
They're in a rough spot.
Yeah, so that's why I just kind of... Oh, yeah, no. They're sitting in that second wild card spot with 87 points. But, no, I'm concerned just because of what I just said about how, like, this team deserves to be in that spot, I think. And they've just... Like, it's just going to come down to luck and how they can't... Things that they can't control. Yeah, they lost to Chicago on Tuesday 4-3, but they came back from 4-1 in the third period. 47 shots, but they started out that game, the first 10 minutes, all Islanders. Yeah. They scored in the first minute. It was like we were just waiting for the next goal to come, and then Barzal with a horrible turnover leads to a 2-on-0. And yeah, then it got to 4-1 Chicago, and it was just kind of like dejected. D'Angelo also got injured and did not play against Dallas last night. He's out for 1 to 2 weeks, which is a huge loss, but Pulak came back last night. Schaefer played over 31 minutes against Chicago, which is the most time played by a teenager. He's just something else.
I was reading something, like someone on Twitter talking about Matthew Schaefer's ice time and like how awesome it is, but also like load management, especially if they are to make the playoffs. Like, he's a young guy, but he's never played this much hockey in his career.
No.
And not even to say he's ever played this much hockey in his career, it's not normal to be playing 31 minutes a night as a defenseman.
Yeah, but, you know.
But good for him.
Good for him. Yeah. The team has so much trust in him, and, like, he rarely makes any mistakes. So, but, yeah, don't want to give too much.
Yeah.
Put too much
There's
on him.
There's a line.
Yeah.
No.
But I'm just really hoping that they're able to get in it, because I feel like at this time of the season they're usually fighting for that. They're fighting for a spot, but they've played lackluster hockey the entire season and don't deserve to be there. Whereas this season they do deserve to be there, and they might get like banished from a spot anyway. And it's just sad.
I think they're gonna be all right. I do. I think they're gonna be okay. I mean, looking at their schedule ahead, they got Florida at home.
They play the Hurricanes twice.
Yeah, but one of the games at home. They play at Buffalo. That's a hard game. Sabres are really good. Besides that, though, every other game should be a win on this Islanders schedule. I mean, they should win 6 of the last 9 for sure, and if they can steal one from the Canes, that's 7. They'll be in, 100%. If they win 7 of the last 9, they're in.
I think the interesting thing with the Islanders, and the same thing you can say for the Blue Jackets, is they're like still very inexperienced teams. So coming down the stretch, I think those Islanders teams that snuck in the past – not last year, but the prior years, were actually, like, quite veteran and had a lot of, like, older guys, more experienced guys, where now it's, like, a lot younger of a team that hasn't really experienced something like this before, especially since, like, you know, Matthew Schaefer's one of the guys leading the charge. But I think you could say the same thing for the Blue Jackets. Like, down the stretch, can they mentally, like, you know, tough it out enough to make the playoffs? Because, again, Blue Jackets, similar position, very young team. You know, fighting their way for a playoff appearance. But I'm trying to pull up the Blue Jackets schedule here just to see, because I think the Senators should be... Actually, Senators is an interesting conversation because Thomas Chabot just got, JT Miller like broke his wrist on a cross check. People were complaining about it, but like that cross check when you're entering the zone happens 1,000 times in an NHL game. Mm-hmm. It's just Chabot has wrist injuries prior, but like that's one of the Senators' best players coming down the stretch here. So for the Blue Jackets, they got the Sharks tomorrow, and then Bruins, Hurricanes twice. They got the Jets, Red Wings, Sabres, Canadiens, Bruins, Capitals. Right, so that's not
that's
the
not
easiest
easy.
Schedule either.
I just think that looking at this, the Islanders have played more games than everyone else.
Yeah, that's the big problem. It's like down the stretch, like can they it's not even keep up. They have to kind of stay one step ahead.
Yeah. They just got to be consistent.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Flyers are a little too far
and
out of it.
Can't be making poor mistakes like what happened on Tuesday.
Yeah. Are you talking about the icing or?
No, about Barzal, but.
Oh, yeah, Barzal, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw the icing controversy, and I do think. Was that Tuesday? Well, I do think, like, it should have been called an icing. Like, so you just got to skate through the whistle sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not. It's an excuse, but it's preventable. It's a controllable. But I do stand with Islanders fans that it should have been nice saying it didn't hit Richie.
Yeah, no. They told him it did, and then he was like, yeah, they didn't hit me.
But you can't give up four goals to the Chicago
exactly.
Blackhawks like that.
That's the problem.
You know? Yeah.
And, well, it's also...
like, Frank Nazar is a heck of a hockey player,
The goalie situation is a problem, too, because Rittich did not play well, and he gave up the first three goals, and then... Sorokin came in, gave up one more, but he had a good rest of the game. And then Sorokin got the shutout against the Blue Jackets. I just think that Rittich has not had a good season. And
he only plays good against the Rangers.
Yeah.
Because I was actually asking someone who covered the Islanders game over the weekend, that Columbus game. I was like, wait, is like Rittich good? Because he's... plays unreal against the Rangers every time.
No,
but
he's not good, and that's gonna be like, how can you can't give Sorokin all of these last nine games,
especially if you want him to be ready for the playoffs.
Right.
Yeah,
but Rittich is not reliable.
Yeah,
and he's almost a liability. So I don't know how they're gonna figure it out. But then finally we're gonna move to the New Jersey Devils, who have been better as of late. Not really in the playoff race, but not eliminated yet. They are 9-3-0 in their last 12, but, I mean, I don't know, too little, too late, kind of. They beat Dallas in an exciting 6-4, and they beat the Preds last night 4-2. But they're kind of just floating, not really making any noise in the grand scheme of things. But, Dom, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just a team that I thought at the beginning of the year, they went on that, like, 8-0 home run. They were great at the Rock, and then... tragedy struck. They had injuries and guys went down. Pesci, I think Luke Hughes been out, and they got the injury bug and stopped playing their brand of hockey, really, I think, at the end of the day for a New Jersey team. Markstrom got hurt. Jake Allen stepped up big time, kept that run rolling, and then that luck kind of went away. Markstrom has not been what he was at the beginning of the year at all.
Yeah, I think when like every year when we're doing the preseason like rundown of the Devils, it's like, okay, the keys to the Devils are Jack Hughes has got to stay healthy, mm-hmm. and goaltending's got to be strong. And we haven't gotten either of those for the Devils this year. Markstrom has an .884 save percentage. He just hasn't been good enough. And then obviously Hughes has been in and out of the lineup. So just no consistency once again. Another season for the Devils where just consistency is a big problem. But actually, unrelated point. You know what I was realizing the other day that's funny? Post-Olympic break, and I'm just thinking Jack Hughes, that's why I'm thinking post-Olympics.
Yeah.
The three best teams in the NHL have been the Senators, the Blue Jackets, and the Sabres. And you gotta wonder, it's like Tage Thompson, so crucial on that USA team.
Yep.
Now crucial for the Sabres. Zach Werenski, so crucial for that USA team. Look who's doing the Blue Jackets. Brady Tkachuk. Do I need to say anything about him?
Yeah.
He's the man. Now look at the Senators. So I just thought that was an interesting point. But back to the Devils.
But not Jack Hughes.
No, not – well, Jack Hughes. Jack Hughes has actually been really good.
Yeah, he has.
Post –
just can't carry the
– Yeah, he can't do everything. And I think Devils fans such have been limited, calling for Fitz's head, right?
Yeah, they have. Yeah. There's such limited production out of lines 3 and 4 offensively.
Yeah.
It's like you can't win hockey games when your 3rd and 4th line don't contribute. Mm-hmm. You can't do it. Like, you look at Buffalo, their 3rd line's incredible. Like,
yeah.
That's why they're a big part of why they're winning games. Obviously, their stars produce, like Tage, Dahlin, you got all those guys. But, like, guys like McLeod stepping up huge for Buffalo, like, that's not a case with the Devils. It's Bratt, Hughes, Hischier, Meyer, Mercer, that's about it.
And if they're not performing, it's a
right.
loss.
That's a loss. And Hamilton has been like a topic of controversy all season. He's a great star defenseman for the team. It's like, why are we like keeping him out and scratching him, trying to trade him? Like, if you want to go at it, go. But like, don't like play mind games with the guy. I don't know. Just Fitz has been atrocious.
It's kind of weird. Like, I remember last year, I think it was James Burley, like when we were talking deadline hockey. He was like, I just don't think, like, the Devils, their window's so, like, long. I don't think they need to rush anything this year. But it's, like, now it begs the question. As long as you have Jack Hughes, you put pieces around him, like, you can be a good hockey team. But is this even a window anymore? Or do you need to kind of not blow up the team, but make a big splash. But there's not really many free agents to make big splashes with. But it seems to me, like, you might have to send, you know, make a big personnel change and try
Definitely.
And, like, recoup some assets.
Well, that's what they
kind of,
like, tried to do with Timo Meier, and he's not really anything
special. Yeah. I mean, Meier, I think you got to – for me, if I'm Tom Fitzgerald, I'm thinking it might be time to – not necessarily Panarin, because Panarin was a pending UFA, but
– time to resign.
is it time to put – you know, Timo Meier on the trade block? Could you put Luke? I don't know what Luke Hughes, if he has like a no movement clause or no trade clause. Obviously, that would really piss off Jack. But it's like, you know, that Luke Hughes has been a big disappointment in Devil's colors, but he's still a good player. So he could, fetch a big haul and maybe get a player back.
It would be good for him, get a new environment.
Yeah, change of scenery type of thing. But obviously, you know, you can't really piss off Jack doing that. But I think that's kind of where the Devils have to look. Like, I think they could do I think they should try to do equivalent of, like, what Florida did. Like, trade Jonathan Huberdeau, Mackenzie Weegar. Everyone was like, wow, this is the stupidest thing ever. You're trading for Matthew Tkachuk. Now the Florida Panthers have 2 Stanley Cups. So.
Well, that would mean, like, trading Jack Hughes.
Yeah, I don't think, but I don't, yeah, I don't, I think it would be more like a Jesper Bratt type of thing. Or I think it could be like,
could be Bratt.
I think Luke Hughes, I think the hype, it was more about the hype around the player. Like, I don't think people realized how good Matthew Tkachuk in Calgary was, which is why it was such a problem. And maybe he wasn't as good in Calgary as he's been in Florida,
he was still a star player for them.
But I think when people, like, hear Luke Hughes, like, they think, like, this guy could still be a star one day in the league. So it's, like, making that sort of big trade. But, I mean, we'll see if Minnesota re-signs Quinn. But I don't think Quinn's going to come to Jersey. I don't even think Jersey has the money to sign.
They thought they were going
to
do that big trade with Siplikov. And, like, the production just hasn't been there.
Yeah.
Like, you get rid of Palat. Okay, he hasn't been really producing. You bring in Siplikov, even worse.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're going to go out and get someone, commit to it and build the team. But, like, it just seems like the strategy's all over the board, and it doesn't add up.
What about Sheldon Keefe?
I think he's okay.
Not the coach's fault.
I think you give him one more year. I think you get a new GM in there. Get him more involved in the operations of the roster and give him a little bit more control. There's no question of what he can do and his track record. I think you give him one more year with a new GM, and if things don't turn around, the door's over there.
Yeah.
For sure.
Fair enough.
Yeah, lots of off-season situations to be figured out for the Devils and the Rangers, and the Islanders, we'll see how they fare in the next few games as we wrap up the regular season. We're also going to wrap up today's show. That's going to be it from us. I'm Sophia Smith, joined by Lydia Perner and Dom Sansone, and behind the boards is Beefy Schlosser. This has been a production of WFUV Sports. Thank you.